This season of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is proudly supported by My Music Staff.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Well, hello there, teachers, and welcome back to Season 1, 2019 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. If you're a regular listener, you might be surprised by the voices coming out of your earbuds right now. I'm sure you were expecting Tim Topham, but this isn't Tim's voice, is it? It's not the right gender, it's not the right accent. So what's going on? Well, if we haven't met yet, my name's Nicola Canton, and I'm the podcast producer for the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. I also run my own blog, Colourful Keys, and a membership site called Vibrant Music Teaching. And I started a podcast on that site last year, my own podcast called the Vibrant Music Teaching Podcast, if you want to check it out. And so Tim thought it would be super fun for me to take over an episode of this podcast, come out away from the keyboards and do a bit of a takeover show for you guys. And of course I agreed. What a fun idea. So it's just me and you for today, but don't worry, Tim will be back next week. Today's show notes and a full transcript and a freebie that I'm going to talk to you about today, a super fun game that I have to share with you, are now available at timtopham.com/episode155. Now, if you do know me, you'll know that I love teaching through games. So that's what this episode is going to be all about. I love games because they help students to reinforce what they're learning without doing a ton of maybe boring theory worksheets or anything like that. Games allow them to explore concepts and loop back over them again and again, which they do need as they work through their music studies, without feeling like it's just you nagging them or asking them questions or drilling on things or having to do a bunch of theory tests just to make sure they're up to standard. Games can reveal so much about how well your student knows a concept, even something that you think they kind of get. They might be using a workaround in their pieces and they don't really understand it. So games can help you to get ahead of this kind of stuff. For example, if a student is reading on the staff and they seem to be reading fine, and then suddenly there's this major problem. You just hit this stage and there's this wall. Playing a game that works on steps and skips or note names or whatever way they're working can help to reveal where the problem actually is. For instance, some students are looking at the note stem. Have you ever had a student do this? They're looking at the note stem instead of the note head. And then once the notes start flipping, it all goes out the window. Nothing's working anymore. So little things like that will be easily revealed in a game, and you won't realize they're happening unless you take it away from the music, and you won't be able to find the underlying problem. That's just one example. But there are many cases where I and teachers who work with my games and people I know have come across something where they really thought a student got something, but when they took it away from the piano or when they took it into the context of a game, they realized, they don't really get that in the way I thought they did. Or they don't really know that term. It was just on the page they were looking at, or they were figuring it out from something else. So games can be used in that way to reinforce learning and to find gaps in students' knowledge. But they can also be used to introduce new concepts. And this is a way that maybe has come to me a little bit more recently in recent years. And I know it's not something that teachers often think about when they think of working with games, but it's a fantastic environment for exploring something new, brand new, meeting it for the first time. For instance, I often do this with, well, I do it with many things, but as an example, tones and semitones, or that's whole and half steps to those of you in the US. So I will introduce that through a game that I have called Slippery Steps, where we're working our way up a staircase. And because they meet it through a game, it makes sense to them on the piano and we don't have to go over and over this and they don't feel under pressure to get it right when they're playing a game. That's the big thing. They don't feel like they are being tested. And they also don't have to play at the same time as thinking about the concept, play the piano, that is. They don't have to perform, come up with the right pitch and the right note value and the right everything all at once. We can take out bits and pieces, which is very hard to do when they're playing something at the piano. Games also are huge for getting kids up off the bench. And if you teach young-ish at all students, I'm sure you've encountered this problem. Students sit for most of the day in school behind a desk, and even the best behaved kids actually need to move. So yes, they might sit politely behind that desk all day, but they need movement. And when they are stuck sitting down all day, they get the wriggles. They just need to jiggle and wiggle about and move around because that's what kids are designed to do, right? They're growing up and they've been designed to play with the environment around them so that they can understand it better and develop. So if they're not moving about, sometimes they can get pretty stuck. And games can be a fantastic way to break up the lesson that students really, really need, especially some students, but all students can benefit from this. Even the ones that seem to be fine sitting at the bench, actually, if you get them up away from the bench and then sitting back down, you'll find they're making faster progress, they're focusing better. Even though they were behaving, quote unquote, pretty much fine already, all kids can benefit from moving about, and so can we, to be honest. So this is especially important the younger the students are that you teach. If you're teaching preschoolers like me, I teach students as young as 3 years old. So that's really where I got into games, was trying to find a way to break concepts down that method books were not breaking down, were not allowing me to teach individually or go over enough times. So that's where I got into teaching games. But it's since expanded to pretty much all of my teaching includes some elements of games. So if you are teaching preschoolers like me, or even any students that are young-ish or young at heart, games can be a great way to explore these things. But even adult students, I have several members of Vibrant Music Teaching that teach adult students through the use of games, and it works great. It takes the pressure off just as much for adult students, if not more, because adult students put so much pressure on themselves that a kid would never think of doing. But adult students know what the result is like, right? So they expect the end result from themselves and they can be pretty harsh. I mean, we all can be pretty harsh to ourselves, right? So giving them a game where they can explore these kinds of concepts is a great thing for them too. And if you have students who aren't completing their theory pages at home, perhaps, or are at least grumbling about it, or you hear from parents that that's an issue or that's their little tiff they have at home, or you've just left theory books aside and you wish you could teach theory better, but it's just not possible because you don't want to be giving students more workbook pages to fill out. I know students here in many schools get far too much homework, right? They're already sitting at a table completing it for hours on end each day. So if that's the case, we can be reluctant to assign them more of the same kind of stuff, even though it might be more needed in the case of music teaching because we only see them once a week. Games can be a fantastic alternative to that kind of theory work or can work alongside it so they can reinforce the learning a little bit better. And the other huge reason that I believe, and probably the strongest reason that I believe in using games in my lessons, is that it's natural for kids. It's how they learn. They learn through playing with stuff, through messing around with it, through trying it out and through exploring it. And it means that we don't have to lecture them or tell them about something. They can find it out for themselves. So that's a bit of why I love teaching through games and why I try to help teachers all over the world do this. But the thing I hear back from teachers a lot is that they just don't have time. And we hear this when it comes to improvisation and other creative things, composing, using games, you name it. A lot of teachers find they don't get time to do all the things. And that's fair enough, I get it. There isn't enough time. A lot of teachers are teaching lessons which are quite short, and even with 45 minutes a week, that's not a long time in the grand scheme of things, right? It's once a week, and we have so much to cram in, and our students need not just piano teaching, they need music education for the most part. So there's just tons of ground to cover, and there's not enough time. So that's what I want to help you with today, is to find that time that you need. I'm going to give you 10 ideas that are going to help you to find more time for games in your lessons so that you and your students can have more fun. Sound good? Okay, so we're going to look at 10 different ways, and I'm going to start with the ones that are going to be the biggest change and probably have the biggest impact on your teaching, and then go down to the smaller and smaller changes until we're talking about just micro little tweaks that can make a difference to how much time you have for games and other creative activities in your lessons. So, tip number one for creating more time for games in your lessons is to simply increase the lesson time. Perhaps the most obvious tip, but most obvious idea, but it's worth considering. If you are teaching entirely 30-minute lessons, I want you to at least imagine what it would be like to teach longer ones as standard, or at least as part of your palette of lessons that you have in your studio. Longer lessons are so much more enjoyable for almost all teachers I've met, but a lot of teachers fall into this trap of doing 30-minute lessons just because they think it's the norm. And to that I would say, the norm for who? Who says that? Yeah, it might be the most common, but that doesn't mean it's right for your studio. And the thing about being an independent music teacher, if you are one, most of us are, working for yourself, you get to make the call. If you don't like 30-minute lessons, don't teach 30-minute lessons. You don't have to. Unless you're working for a music school, of course. Who says that you have to? But for most of us, we set our hours, we set the times we teach, and there's no real reason to stick with 30 minutes if it's not working for you. A lot of teachers tell me that they're doing it because they don't think their parents would pay for 45-minute lessons. And to that I kind of say, well, would they really not? Don't put words in people's mouths. Don't assume how people are going to feel about something. Have you tried? Have you actually approached them about it? If you haven't, first of all, do that. A tip about approaching them about it, though. If you come to them with, would you like to switch to 45-minute lessons? No one is going to say yes. That's like someone coming to you in the supermarket and you have a pasta sauce in your cart that you know you like, and someone comes to you and said, would you like to switch for this slightly more expensive pasta sauce that you've never tried before? No, you wouldn't. Why would you change to the expensive one? You would just stick with the one you have that you know is fine for you and be on your merry way, right? Well, it's the same thing for parents. You can't go to them and just ask them if they would like to do it, or to students directly, either or. You need to give them a reason, and you need to give it as a recommendation. It's coming from your expertise as a teacher. You recommend that they switch to 45 minutes because of XYZ. These are the reasons why your child would do so much better in 45-minute lessons, and how much more valuable it would be for them, and you're recommending that they switch to it. So that would be a bit about how to approach it. Always give a recommendation rather than a suggestion or an option. If you really want someone to switch to a longer lesson time, make it a strong, strong recommendation rather than an idea that they might try. If they really can't pay for it, there are other ways to extend the lesson time, which I'll talk about in a moment. But try that first. If you wish you taught 45-minute lessons for every student, then give it a go. Maybe some of them will switch, maybe not all will. That's fine. at least be a step in the right direction. And if you're worried about not being able to teach as many students, well, isn't that a good thing? Wouldn't you prefer to teach the same hours and less students? It's going to be more, I mean, the same money for you, probably roughly, right? If you set your fees correctly, it's going to be the same money for you with less admin time, less planning, less overhead if you're paying credit card fees and stuff like that. It's going to be easier on you, so why not do it? Okay, so that's if you can consider it, switch to longer lesson times. That's going to provide you so much more time and less stress when it comes to fitting in all this creative stuff that Tim talks about and the games and anything else that you want to fit into lesson time. Extend it to 45 minutes, extend it to an hour if that's what you want to do. See how you go and just give it your best shot with the parents and convincing them. Now, if you can't switch to longer lesson times, one way that you can do is just to do something like I do in my studio, which I call buddy lessons. That's where we have two students overlapping their lessons in the middle, right? So let's say Sally comes at 3 p.m. and then at 3:30, Sam comes along. And then at 4 p.m., Sally leaves. And then at 4:30 p.m., Sam leaves, right? So Sally and Sam have an overlapping section in the middle. This means that a parent doesn't have to pay for an entire 60 minutes, although I would recommend that they pay for slightly more than 45 minutes, right? The parent doesn't have to pay for the full amount, so it's a little bit cheaper for them. The student is receiving an hour of instruction, and it's a great opportunity for games because you have two students together. And wherever possible, that is so much more beneficial than just you and your student playing. I will say that you and your student playing is much better than not playing games at all. Okay, you can, you know, pretend to lose and you can basically make them answer all of your questions as well as their own and all of these little cheats that we do. But if you can get multiple students together to play games together and learn from each other, it's just magic. It's just amazing to get them into that situation and notice how they riff off each other and learn from each other's experiences and give each other little tips. My students aren't very competitive generally about it. They usually help each other out when it comes to playing games together. So if extending lesson times is not an option or not something you feel like you want to do, I highly suggest you consider buddy lessons. It has completely revolutionized my studio. I am in love with teaching in this way. And it's not a massive change from being a private teacher. So I know a lot of teachers are reluctant to switch over to groups, right? Because it feels like this huge change. It feels like you need all this equipment. You need to teach in a completely different environment. And you either are stressed by that idea or you just don't want to do it. I don't want to rent a commercial space. I never have. I love teaching out of my home. I love being able to work in the office and then walk straight into my teaching studio and make a cup of tea when I want to and all of that stuff. I love teaching out of my house. So I don't want a big, massive group teaching space. And maybe you feel the same way. I also enjoy working one-on-one with students. I really like working in that environment. I think it's something that kids don't get enough of in school, is actual individual instruction. And I think it's really beneficial. I think group lessons are super beneficial as well. I'm not knocking them, but for most kids that I see, I think that one-on-one time is really, really valuable, especially as they progress through their studies. But so is the together time. And that's how I landed at buddy lessons where they're overlapping in the middle because I can have the best of both worlds in my view. I can keep my home teaching space. I don't have to radically alter everything I do about how I teach. But I can still provide these opportunities for my students to work together, to do improvisation, to play duets, to work on scales as a team, and to play games together to learn about theory and music history and all of that good stuff. So give buddy lessons some consideration if you think your studio might be up for a change. if you're not up for that much of a change, we're going down in the change factors as we go through. My next idea, idea number three, to fit more games into your studio is to add some group workshops. This is a very popular option for teachers who teach one-on-one, and there are different ways that you can do it. So, for example, you could have some teachers do, say, one group workshop a month or group week a month or every 2 months. And on those weeks, their students don't have private lessons. They have group lessons instead, right? So they entirely replace their private lessons with group. And that's a great opportunity to bring out the games and the improvisation and the ensemble work, have them perform for each other, all of that good stuff. So you can do them as a replacement for private lessons, and it can give you a bit of extra flexibility that week. I know many teachers in the US do this kind of thing around Thanksgiving so that they do the groups all before Thanksgiving or before the, I believe it's on a Thursday, right? So they do it before that happens and it's earlier in the week, and then people can go away, they can be with family, they can do everything. So it's a great option for a situation like that where you don't actually want to take a whole week off teaching as part of your schedule, but you need some kind of flexibility. You need to move things around a bit. A group week is a great way to do that. In my studio, I don't go that way. I don't do them instead of our lessons during that week. I do 4 group workshops a year as part of our standard schedule on top of lessons. So 4 Sundays during the year, 2 or 3 in semester 1 and 1 in semester 2. That's just the way it works out. I do group workshops for my students, and all of my students are welcome to come. Obviously, not all can attend every single one, but whoever wants to come along does. And I normally do 3 separate groups on the one day, so that everyone can attend. And I do multi-level group workshops, so that means anyone can come to any one of those. Now, that makes it trickier to plan, but it's still a super beneficial experience for them, and it works really well for me, because I can do multi-level games, I can split them up into smaller groups to do single-level games, and we can do improvisation where I easily make it work for multiple levels at once. So that's a great thing to add to your studio. Now, it can be something that you charge extra for. That's one way to do it. Or it can be something like me, where it's rolled into the tuition and it's something that sets you apart. This is a fantastic argument, in fact, or it's a little contributing factor to how much students or parents expect makeup lessons. Contentious issue, I know. But if you have lots of extras like this, and if you talk about your studio in this way, that tuition includes a weekly lesson, 2 recitals a year, 4 group workshops, this and that and the other, and access to this and access to that, it makes it much less likely that students and parents are going to want a makeup or are going to be baffled that you won't offer one, because they understand that they're not paying for a weekly lesson, because they're not. Even if you don't do this stuff, they are not. They are paying for enrollment in your studio and everything that entails, and all of your professional development to stay on top of things, and your admin work and everything you do to make your studio a great place to be and to learn, right? Anyway, that's a slight tangent when we're talking about games. But group workshops do have that extra benefit if you roll them into tuition, or you can charge extra for them, or you can do camps and other kind of occasional group workshops like that. And that's a great way to bring in game opportunities for your students. If you can't do longer lessons, you don't have time in the lessons, and you don't want to switch to something like buddy lessons that would roll that into your week.
Now, a quick word from our sponsor, My Music Staff. Most of you have already heard about My Music Staff and how their software helps thousands of music teachers manage their businesses more efficiently. They handle all of your student management issues, scheduling, billing, and so much more. It's what I personally use in my own studio, and it's no surprise why it's the leading studio management software. What I think really makes My Music Staff stand out is its community-driven development and personal approach to customer support. It was such a pleasant surprise jumping into My Music Staff for the first time and realizing how in tune it was with my business and the ins and outs of a music studio. Since they partner with the music community to develop their software, they've been able to anticipate what teachers need and are constantly improving their software to exceed expectations. And a more recent example of responding to community feedback was the addition of a very popular feature, streaming video and audio files directly within the My Music Staff app. And that means that no longer do you have to download files to your device. So it makes it incredibly easy to share content with your students. My Music Staff is super easy to get up and running. The transition away from paper and spreadsheets is painless. If you do need help, the quality of support is second to none, and you'll always get a fully personalized response. I have yet to see the level of attention and care I receive from My Music Staff provided by any other software platforms I use, and I use a lot of software in my business. So what have you got to lose? Just go to mymusicstaff.com and sign up for their free 30-day trial today.
Okay, so that's first three ideas. We've got increasing to longer lesson times, changing to something like buddy lessons, or adding group workshops to your schedule. Now, as I said, we're moving down in the complexity and the commitment from you. So the next idea is to simply send the games home. You can't increase the lesson time. You just don't have time for it. You can't move to a different system. You can't add group workshops. Okay, so create a games lending library and send them home as assignments. Games do not have to be done only at the lesson with you. They can be done at home with a parent. And let me say that if you're currently assigning theory worksheets, games might be a welcome substitution. So if you're going to start a lending library, set it up like a proper library, okay? Have everything packaged up in folders, and I'll actually leave a link in the show notes. So again, that's timtopham.com/episode155. I'll leave a link in the show notes for how I store and organize my games, because a lot of teachers have found that very useful to read about and to store there similarly. I do it in these plastic pocket folders, and everything goes together. So the game cards, the board, and the instructions, and something to use as game counters if they're needed in the game, go in one folder. So they're easy to lend out and the instructions are right there so parents can learn how to play them and play them at home with their kiddos. So if you create a lending library, make sure you have a sign out sheet and that you know you're staying on top of who has what, because these things are not free for sure. But you can factor this kind of cost into your registration fee or into your regular tuition fees, depending on how your studio works. And it doesn't have to cost a ton, and it can have a huge impact on how well your students are learning, how enthusiastic they are to practice, right? If they're having an off day and they just don't want to go to the piano, they can play their theory game instead. And it can be an actual part of their assignments. So if you're going to go this way, I really suggest that you put it on the assignment sheet. Make it a real part of their homework. Don't treat it as, oh, this is a fun extra if you get extra time. They won't do it then. But if you put it on the assignment sheet and tell the parents this is an important part of their homework and it's going to help them to learn about this and that, and it's super fun, so play it with, you know, your parent, the parent and the student can play it together. They can play it with siblings, especially if you've multiple siblings learning together at your studio, that kind of thing. So that they treat it seriously, because games are a serious business. They are important. They can be really valuable for student learning. So starting a lending library is a great way to get your students playing more games, especially when you don't have time for them in the lesson. And it's a great thing to swap out instead of doing theory workbooks or theory worksheets. The next idea sort of plays on this, and that's to take a flipped learning approach to theory. So you can send a video tutorial or other information or even some reading assignment with your student for their practice so that they have already met a concept. This can save you a lot of time if you're going to be introducing something like, let's take the example I used at the start, like semitones, right? Half steps. And you're going to be showing them at the piano how they're side by side and reminding them that there's two white keys side by side sometimes and that kind of stuff. You probably say that a pretty similar way every time. So why not record a video of that? And whenever a student is coming up to that time, you have it uploaded to YouTube and you just send them a link to that and tell their parent, listen, get them to listen to this at home. and we're going to chat about it at the lesson next week. And then you can play you can have a brief discussion. Remember that video? What was that about? How did that work? Did you have any questions about it? And then play the game together to reinforce that learning. So you're saving yourself that bit of explanation time. And you can do this with tons of things. It doesn't even have to be stuff that you're going to play a game with. It can just save you time in general. If you're recording these types of tutorials and sending them to students so that they can get some of the instruction, not the hands-on instruction, I truly believe they need that. This isn't a replacement. But it can mean that you don't have to spend time explaining something that you explain the same way every time. And you can save some of the lesson time that way for playing games or for improvising or for whatever it is that you need to work on. So I have actually videos that might be useful for this. So I recommend you create your own if there's particular things and particular ways you say things. It's great to have your own library on YouTube of these kinds of things. But I also have a ton of videos on YouTube for this myself. I have videos which align to my theory workbooks called Thinking Theory. So if you search YouTube for Thinking Theory Music or something like that, or Colorful Keys is my channel name, then those should pop up there. And I have whole playlists for prep level, grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, book 1, book 2, book 3, whatever way you want to think about it. And those will introduce each new theory concept, and they're available in UK or international and US versions as well. So those might be handy for this kind of approach, and so might be my scale videos. I have scale reminder videos for the majors, harmonic minors, and pentascale majors on my YouTube channel as well. So those can be great to prep a student for a new scale so that they can try the fingering at home or at least have seen it and be familiar with it a little bit before they get to the studio. And then you can play a game to reinforce the scale, or you can just hop right into the scale and they're a little bit ahead of the game that way. So again, that's the Colorful Keys YouTube channel, and I'll leave a link in the show notes. Our next idea is a very simple one. So idea number 5 is to start your lessons with a game. Sorry, that's idea number 6 actually. Start your lessons with a game. Very simple idea, but anytime I find I'm not finding the time in my lessons for something I think is important, but I'm just not fitting it in, that's my simple solution. Start with it. Do it first. Right? It's just like you should eat your vegetables first. Sometimes you need to do the most important thing first. That means it always gets fit in. It always is a priority, and it genuinely is a priority because you're putting it first. And you may think, oh, then I'm going to run out of time for stuff. You might be surprised that you don't. If you set a time limit on the game, or you just pick a game carefully, and you start off the lesson with that game, your student might be in a better mood, more prepared for a concept if you plan it carefully, or just, you know, have a little bit more brain energy left to practice new stuff, to show you old pieces, or whatever else it is. So give it a go. Start lessons with games and see how it changes your students' attitude. Because once you get into reviewing old pieces and looking at new stuff, it can be easy for the lesson time to just get eaten up. And it isn't always in the most efficient way. So maybe just try it. Try starting with it and see where you get to. Games can also be sped up. So idea number 7 is to play games at lightning speed. You can literally make them take up less time. One way to do this is if the game has a die, just make it dice. Just put in 2, right? Double all the scores, even if it's cards that have numbers on them, double those. It's very simple for you to complete the game just that little bit faster if you double everything. Another simple way to make games go faster is to simply set a time limit. I often do this, and students are not as bothered by it as I think teachers think they're going to be. If you just say the furthest ahead at the end of 3 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever you have, is the winner, then that's fine. Just make sure that everyone gets an even number of goes if you're working with multiple students. And they won't be bothered by it, as long as you're clear. It doesn't matter if they make it the whole way to the end of a game board or complete their set of cards or whatever it is, if you're just clear about this is going to be 5 minutes and whoever is ahead at the end is the winner, because then we need to do this other awesome thing back at the piano. Idea number 8 then is to split up repetitions of pieces with a game. What am I talking about here? What I mean is that you can use a game as a way to keep your student thinking, alert, and focused when there's something they need to practice with you. So we all have those times when you just need to sit and force a student to practice something multiple times so that they get it, because they are not going to struggle through it at home and you need to babysit them through it a little bit, right? So let's say you have that 2-bar section which your student needs to work on, and they probably need to repeat it about 10 to 15 times in order to really get the fingering pattern or whatever. Well, have them do it twice, get up, take a round of the game, go back to the piano, have them do it twice, etc. Now, this might feel a bit odd, and it might feel like you're getting less far, but I'd encourage you to think about it differently. Studies have actually shown that when we're practicing, if we yo-yo, well, my technical term, right? Yo-yo back and forth between things, we actually learn more, we make more progress. So if you're working on a Bartok piece and a Bach piece, and you take your bit of your Bartok and do that a couple of times, and then do the Bach, and then the Bartok, and then the Bach, it feels like you're getting less far. It feels like you're not making as much progress. Because when you get back to the Bartok and then back to the Bach, it feels hard still, right? It doesn't feel any easier each time, or at least not much. But actually, we retain that much better than when we just do it 10 times in a row and it feels really nice because we're getting better every time. And then the next day, we retain less of that. Okay, so it feels better at the time, but it's worse results overall. So this might feel like you're getting less far with your student, but they actually might be learning more. If you just take one go of a game and then go back to the piano and play that, and it's also getting them up and running back and forth. Great for burning off excess energy or for waking students up if they're a little bit sleepy, right? So that's idea number 8 coming into the home stretch here. Idea 9 is to just skip something. Oh my gosh, what a thought, right? But sometimes we don't need to do everything we think we need to do. We don't have to get through all of the scales your student practiced and all of the pieces they practiced and all of the new pieces and whatever else they were working on. We don't actually always have to do that. Sometimes we do, but sometimes we're just doing what we think we should, right? It's back to the 30-minute lesson idea. We're just doing what we think we're supposed to. And actually, our student would be better off not doing that, not going back over a certain piece, or not having you preview the new piece with them. So if there's an old piece, for example, if they've practiced a bunch of pieces and they come in and they say, listen, it wasn't a good practice week. Granny was sick. She was in hospital, etc. Or if you just know they're not a great practicer in general and they haven't said anything, then maybe it would be better to just ask them, listen, are there any of your pieces that you feel you just need to spend more time on and you don't need any extra help from me, but you just need more practice with them? For some students, they will absolutely pick out one of them and say, yeah, I just didn't get to grips with that. I know I can do it. I know how to do it, but I just didn't get the time to do it. Okay. So put that aside. Hear it next week. For sure, hear it next week. But you don't have to hear it today, do you? You can just set it aside and use that time for games. There's no point you listening to them struggle through something and giving them the same advice that you gave them last week, is there? So that's one way where you can just skip over something. Another thing you might be able to skip over is a new piece. From time to time, I like to set my students the challenge of looking at a new piece that we've never looked at before at home and coming to me next week with any questions or with them playing it if there was no problem. Because sometimes we can handhold a little bit too much. I know I certainly can. And if we don't provide these opportunities for our students to be independent, to work on things independently, then they're never going to feel confident doing it. And if they don't feel confident working on things independently, then how are they going to be musicians for life? I know that's a goal for a lot of us, right? We want students to be playing, no matter what they end up doing as a career, to be playing for fun, for life. And they're not going to just pick up random sheet music if they've always had a teacher to walk them through it and point out the key signature and do whatever else we're doing, right? So just skipping a new piece every so often and telling a student that their special challenge is to get as far as they can and do as much of it as they can by themselves is a great way to give you a little bit of extra time in the lesson and make them more independent musicians. Okay, so that's 9 ideas so far for using more games in your piano teaching. I'm just going to run you through all of those before we talk about idea number 10. So first of all was to just increase your lesson time. Simple as that. Have a discussion with parents, get them to move up their lesson times and make your life that little bit less stressful. The second idea was to do buddy lessons. Those are lessons which overlap in the middle and my favorite way to teach. So there's more information about that on my blog, which I'll leave links to in the show notes. The next idea was to do group workshops occasionally or regularly, either replacing your private lessons that week or in addition to them. And there are various different ways that teachers have had great success with adding group workshops to their calendar. Another idea is to send games home with your student. Create a lending library and allow that to be your theory assignment some weeks so that students can play the games at home with a parent or with a sibling and reinforce their learning in a different way and with a fun way to practice. The next idea was to do flipped learning, having your student review videos at home about new concepts that you're going to explain so that you can save lesson time by not having to give the same explanation to different students again and again and having them prepare those at home using YouTube videos. Then we talked about starting lessons with a game. Maybe it's as simple as you need to make this your priority, so it has to come first, and that might allow you to save time in the rest of the lesson and make more progress with your student. Then we had the idea of just doubling the speed of the game, double the dice, or set a time limit on the game so that it doesn't run wild on your lesson and you can fit it into the time you have available. You can also use games to split up repetitions of a piece, jumping from the piano back to the game, back to the piano, back to the game, and burning off some extra calories in the process. And then you can also give yourself permission to just skip over something that's not necessary. This is a great way to just reevaluate where your priorities are and why you're doing the things you're doing in the lessons and whether some of them are just the default rather than being the best way to use that time. So that's 9 ideas. Idea 10 isn't really an idea at all. It's a bit of a talking to that you can have with yourself. And that's that if all 9 of these ideas seemed like something you couldn't do, seemed like, oh, no, that's not for me. No, that's not for me. Well, then maybe that's not the problem. Maybe it's not about the time. Maybe it's about the way you think about games. I do not see games as a reward for behaving for the rest of the time. I don't see them as a bit of fun that I add to lessons to keep students from falling asleep. I see them as a real valuable thing that I do in my teaching and a foundation of how I teach. The games that I use have specific pedagogical design. They are designed to work on some concept and to teach it in a way that couldn't be taught without the game. That actually speeds up the process of learning. It's not just a distraction. It's not just a bit of fun. It's actually a core part of my teaching. It's well planned. It's not something I grab a random game that might work for a student at the last minute so that I can break up their lesson time. It's great to be breaking up the lesson time and to be using off-bench activities and games to do that, but that's not how I use games. They break up the lesson time almost as an incidental to the fact that I'm using them because they're a great way to teach. And I'm using this game today with this student because they need to learn about this thing, right? I have a plan. And if you're thinking about games as just a bit of crack, as we say in Ireland, just a bit of fun, then you're not going to find the time to fit them in because they're just a distraction. But that's not what they are. They're not just a bit of fun. They can be a truly valuable teaching tool. So idea number 10 is just to sit down and give yourself a new perspective and have a talking to yourself about whether you really believe in this as a strategy. Because if you don't, if you disagree with me, that's fine. But don't be trying to fit things in if it doesn't fit your teaching philosophy and if you don't think that it's valuable. Okay? Right, I hope these ideas were helpful for you guys today and that you enjoyed this takeover episode of the podcast. If you didn't, don't worry, Tim will be back next week. And he's going to be joined by one of our favorite people, Forrest Kinney. Forrest is going to be on the podcast to talk about pattern-based improvisation, something Forrest is super passionate about and a wonderful teacher of teachers about. And they're going to be chatting about that and how we can bring it into our teaching. I'm super looking forward to listening to it myself. And if you are interested in using games in your teaching and getting them into your studio and you want games like I described that work on something specific, well, then you're in luck because on the show notes for this episode, I have shared with you one of the games from Vibrant Music Teaching called Interval, Sprintival, Schminterval. Okay. All the games have super silly names, but specific pedagogical purposes. This one works on intervals, as you might imagine, in a pretty unique way. It's a great one. It's a perennial favorite in my studio, and I know you're going to love it. So go over to timtopham.com/episode155, and you can grab that game on the show notes. And thank you so much for joining me and for sticking with this rather unusual episode of the podcast. I hope you had fun with it. I'm all about having fun. And I hope the ideas were useful. If you have any questions about it or want to find me, you can find me on the show notes page. Just leave a comment there and I'll get back to you, or find me around Facebook in the Vibrant Music Studio Teachers Facebook group. And I'll be happy to chat about games or anything else that came up as part of today's episode. That's it for this week, guys. Tim will see you back for episode 156 next week.
Just before you go, if you've enjoyed today's show, I'd love for you to check out my Inner Circle Piano Teaching Community. It's the go-to resource for piano teachers looking to continue their professional development, connect with other teachers and experts around the world, and to access hundreds of world-class training resources, including our academy courses, lesson plans, teaching videos, technology help, and much more. Whether you're just starting out or have been working hard to build your studio for a while, the Inner Circle community will give you the skills, support, and confidence you need to grow the studio of your dreams. Whether that's just about teaching a small number of students one-on-one in your home, or about hiring a commercial space, employing other teachers, and building an entire music teaching empire. With courses on both the teaching and business side of running your studio, live coaching, and our thriving community forums, you can get quick answers to questions, set yourself challenges, get feedback on your ideas, and feel confident teaching in new and exciting ways. For more info and how to join us inside the circle, head over to timtopham.com/community today. I'll see you on the inside.
We'll conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.